Welcome to the Bureau Briefing. Before we get started, I want to thank our sponsors. They are amazing. Thank you to MailChimp. If you need a marketing platform, MailChimp is so much more than just email. They help you with Facebook ads, with Google ads. You just got to check them out. And the way that you can slice and dice the campaigns, it's beautiful. 10,000 feet. You know, if you need insights into your projects and your people, 10,000 feet is the resourcing tool that can help you with that. And also, gather content. Content is always the thing that drags every project down. But when you use Gather Content, you can get a handle on it. And now, let's get on with the show.
Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. It's Carl, and with me today, not from Melbourne, Australia, where he lives, or Liverpool, where he was born, but from Auckland, New Zealand. It is Mr. Colin Ellis. How are you, Colin?
Carl, I'm great. Thank you.
Well, now, you speak all over the place. You're a trainer, best-selling author of The Conscious Project Leader. What is the day-to-day like for Colin Ellis?
It's a bit of a tornado, Carl. I kind of blow into cities, you know, kind of get all excited and energetic for about 90 minutes and then go again. It's a mix of airplanes, taxis, being on site with clients, and then coming back to the hotel, kind of debriefing and writing some things down, and then doing it all again the next day.
Well, see, now there's that guy who tells us to stay thirsty, my friends, who's supposed to be the world's most interesting man. I think you may be up for the title.
I'm going to give him a run for the title. Yeah, definitely.
Amazingly well-dressed. I have to say, I know that there's a story behind the suits. Tell everybody, like, what is this? It's like every time I see you, you're wearing this amazing suit.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things, right? Where yeah, I often joke, I'm being from Britain, I was born in a suit, which is of course not true. Of course, it's not true. I've always, since my early 20s, I've always taken a lot of care with the way that I dressed. And I wanted to demonstrate to people that I take pretty much everything about my professional life seriously. And it's just something that I love doing, Carl. I really like getting dressed up. One of my friends recently had the good fortune to meet Richard Branson. He said, oh, you would hate him. Hate him. I was like, why? He cuts people's ties off. I was like, I could never meet Richard Branson. Because I like wearing kind of odd in that way. So yeah, I do like to dress well. Yeah.
Well, now see, and that to me is beautiful. Because that's how you want to dress. Hmm. And for me, I was forced into it early on and ended up in sort of a corporate advertising type career, had to wear ties, do all that stuff. And as soon as I started my own company, it was just like, that's over with. And it was Thoreau, I think, it might've been Walden, but he said, beware of any enterprise that requires a change of clothing.
Yeah.
So you showed up in a suit. So yeah. You stayed in a suit. I think that's amazing. If the two of us ever got on stage together, I'm going to be wearing shorts and a t-shirt, and it's going to be obvious which one of us is still trying and which one of us has given up.
I met someone on the street in Melbourne who I knew about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I had all of the stuff on. And she said to me, she's like, do you always dress like this all of the time? I was like, no, when I go to bed, I change. I was like, but I have a motto is you only dress once in a day. I was like, so when I get up, I do this. And then when I go to bed, I do something different.
All right. But is it full on like silk pajamas?
No. It's way more casual. My time to be casual is when I'm asleep.
Okay, good. And we've probably just started going into that part of the podcast where you may want to warn your children, it's going to get a little racy. No, just kidding. Not going to get a little racy. Tell us about your book, The Conscious Project Leader.
Well, I've been in the project management profession for 20 years, Carl. And one of the things that I noticed, particularly early on in my career, there's no how-to guide for project managers. Now, there's lots of textbooks and programs out there that can tell you the theory of stuff, right? So in theory, you do this, and there's a lot of process stuff. And obviously in the US, there's the Project Management Body of Knowledge. In the UK, Australia, New Zealand, it's PRINCE2. There's a mix of stuff. But there was no kind of honest assessment of this is what it's like to be a project manager. And also, here are some tips on how to do it. Now, I'm specifically talking about things like, we've made leadership too hard, we've made it too big, we've made it too complicated, we've made it hierarchical. So one of the things I do in the book is I break down what leadership actually is, you know, and it's a set of behaviors and you're a role model for others. And also I break down how to build great teams, because essentially, and it doesn't matter whether you're a digital project manager or, you know, kind of an agile, you're working in Scrum, we've still got to build great teams to do great work. But there was no how-to book, so I thought, well, I'm going to write it. And so I did. And it was way more popular than I ever thought that it would be, if I'm really honest. I thought I was writing it for me. Oh, and to demonstrate to my parents what I actually did. Because, like, literally every time I spoke to them, they were like, what do you do again?
So, it's funny. My parents tell people that I'm a motivational speaker. And I'm like, I just go with it, you know? My kids once told people that I was, I was like one of those people that talk at TED, only it's not TED. I was like, wait a second. What? I don't understand. What was that? So, how long has the book been out?
It's been out 3 years now, Carl. Yeah, so I did it.
3 years now.
I did it. 3 years? 2 years? Two years, and I wrote a second book last year called The Project Rots from the Head, which is all about how senior managers need to change the way they govern projects. So, it's been out 2 years.
Okay, great. And then the second book, how is that one doing?
And that one's doing really well too. And I think because there's a hell of a lot of humor in there as well, Carl. You know, I like to do things. I posted on LinkedIn at the weekend this quote from Dame Judi Dench, the actress, and she said, I think you should take your work seriously, but not yourself. That's the best combination. And so the book is full of practical stuff to help you do things differently. But there's also a fair bit of humor in there as well. So, you know, which is represented in the title. The projects do rot from the head. You know, senior managers are still the biggest factor in whether projects are successful or not. So I have a bit of a dig in the title at that.
Well, now you're going to be joining us this September at the Digital PM Summit. I'm so glad. And when Brett first sent me a video of one of your talks, I was like, I love this guy. I mean, the energy that you're going to bring, that you're going to start the show with, is going to be great. And you're talking about digital transformation. And I just have to say, I first heard about digital transformation probably about 3 or 4 years ago. It was from friends of mine at ClearLeft in the UK. And it was one of those things where I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's like, okay. But one of the things they said to me that I thought was so brilliant was that there used to be a chief electricity officer back in the day. And this was the person, once electricity was shown to be, steam's a great technology, don't get me wrong. But once electricity is shown to be better, it's like, how do you incorporate electricity into your business? And then they were like, well, that's what digital transformation is. It's like now there are these people in companies who are responsible for making sure that we get digital.
Yeah.
Your talk is about digital transformation starts with you. So what are you going to cover?
Oh, I don't want to spoil it, but what am I going to
cover? Well, don't just give that tea just enough.
What do I cover, Carl? It's a great question. I joke a lot about digital transformation because digital transformation is just the natural evolution of business. But consultants are the thing. Right? What are you doing in digital? If you're not doing digital transformation, what are you doing? You know, and I joked yesterday here in New Zealand that even farmers are doing digital transformation because they're going out and buying different phones. But the important thing is for any kind of transformation, what we forget is we think that digital transformation is the implementation of technology, which is only partly true. Because digital transformation is how do we evolve our culture such that we're able to leverage different tools and different ways of doing things. And that's the bit that everybody forgets. And so what you end up doing is you invest, the organizations invest millions in digital transformation without ever changing who they are, the way that they do things, and without getting the organization ready for better, smarter, different ways of working. So at the minute, going agile is very much on vogue, right? It's my favorite topic to cover, right? We're going agile. Okay, well, great. That's that then. You're going to be massively successful. You know, you've got a picture of a CEO in front of a Kanban board going, look, we're agile. Yeah, no, not really, mate. No. And they think that that's digital transformation. It's, oh, you know, we're going to be doing scrums and we're going to change all our team names to tribes and squads.
More post-it notes.
Yeah, more post-it notes. Yeah. 3M. As soon as people invented agile, 3M must have been like, come on.
Here we go. Bring that here on. We go.
Another $6 billion. Come on. So I very much talk about personal responsibility with digital transformation, is that we have all got a responsibility to change the way that we think, to change the way that we act. And organizations have a responsibility to put time and effort in building a culture that's ready for digital transformation rather than just starting technology projects.
So when you're talking about some of these companies, I mean, if you're talking about millions, you're talking about pretty large companies. And how do they start with the cultural side? And I can only imagine that they kind of look twice and go, how do we change our people? What do you recommend to them when you go in and you're working with them?
Yeah, so where do you start, right? So Dutch Bank, ING, based out of Holland in Europe, they're a model for this. And what they started, Carl, was they sent everybody on EQ training, right? So emotional intelligence for years and years and years downplayed the role of emotional intelligence in our lives and our businesses, right? We've even called it soft skills to make it sound right. Where we all know it's the hardest thing
it's
to change.
It's so hard.
So it's so hard. It really, really is. And so what they did is they made sure that everybody was self-aware. So the things that I do when I work with organizations to change their cultures is we do personality profiling. But personality profiling on its own isn't enough. Firstly, we have to dumb it down to a point where everyone understands it. Like if you get a profile back and it says you're an astronaut physicist, like really? How is that applicable to work? You know, it's just not. And then you give people a series of choices to say, here's the stuff that you're really good at. And what we need you to do is to coach other people at being really good at this stuff. Here are your blind spots. Here's some things that you may or may not be very good at. What we need you to do is to plug those gaps. And so I help individuals, I guess, plug those gaps by saying, well, listen, you're not very good at being passionate when you talk because you're an introvert, right? So what comes natural to you is quiet, you know, kind of soul work. And so I help them to do that. Also help extroverts to shut up and listen. You know, it's the irony. It's like every now and again, you've got to shut up and listen. So, you know, you start with all that. So Dutch Bank, ING, they did this. And they did it for 9 months. And at the end of that 9 months, they made everybody redundant and apply for their own job, reapply for their job. Right. And so what they said, Bart Schlackman was the COO at the time. And he said, we lost a lot of people who had the right skills, but the wrong behaviors.
Yeah.
So they started there and then they gave their staff the opportunity to redefine the culture. So, you know, I pretty much do exactly the same thing, except with the redundancy things. I don't want people to lose their jobs. I want people to see what they need to work on in order to become the best version of themselves. But that cultural definition piece is really, really important, is actually taking the time with staff, because you can't tell people what the culture is, Carl. Mm. You have to involve them in a conversation where they get to define the culture they believe that they need in order to deliver transformation. And we neatly package all that up in a little culture deck, and you've got the recipe for success. And then the key is everybody holding each other to account.
Well, and culture is what the people who work at a company make it, right? I mean, that's the thing. I've been in this discussion several times about, can you create a culture or can you only enable it, right? Can you only give it what it needs? And for me, it's always one of those amazing things. I always see culture as the way that the internal team defines a company, and brand is the way the rest of the world defines a company. And so it's one of those things, if they're out of sync, that you've got this real issue. But when you're talking about these assessments and the individual assessments, and I imagine there's some team dynamic stuff in there as well. How are you determining? I mean, is it a Myers-Briggs type thing, or what's going on with the assessments?
Oh, it's a type thing. I mean, I use a tool called Clarity 4D, which is, you know, purely based, like most of these things are on Carl Jung's work around personality. I just make it easy to understand, because too many of them are too complicated.
Right.
So I've got the accreditation. It's a really straightforward, easy to understand tool. But what people forget, Carl, is that culture is the sum of everyone's attitudes, beliefs, behaviors, and traditions. And the things that hold organizations back are people's attitudes, beliefs, behaviors, and traditions. Mm. So what you need to do is to redefine that. And you need to do it at the start and say, from today, our culture is this or needs to be this. And there's a whole bunch of things to work on. You know, Netflix's culture deck is, you know, it's been around, it's been in the public domain for a few years now. And so, you know, people like me, I kind of ate that work a little bit. Obviously, my process is different to get there. But one of the great things it says in the culture deck is that we're a team, not a family. So straight away, they're talking about the fact that we're in this together, right? But it's not, we're not here just to play nice and be nice to each other, right? That's part of it, right? It's part of it, but it's not all of it. And then they go on to say, we're a pro sports team, not a kids recreational team. And so, you know, I remember one of my favorite stories is my son played for a soccer team and they got beat 9-0. And he came off the pitch and he said, you know what, Dad, even though we got beat 9-0, I really enjoyed myself. And like, kind of conventional parental wisdom say that's a great thing, son. I'm so glad. Yeah, no, I didn't do that. I was like, I said, dude, that's really good, but just imagine how you would have felt had you won 9-0.
Yeah.
And I think we often lack that in our teams and in our cultures, you know. And I talk about it on stage. Everyone's got to put a shift in. And if you don't put a shift in, then there should be consequence. And so when you look at all these high-performing teams and high-performing cultures around the world, and this is inherent in the work that I do with organizations and in their cultures, is we talk about, well, what does it mean to put a shift in, and how are we going to hold each other accountable to that call? Otherwise, what you end up with is the same old attitudes, beliefs, behaviors, and traditions mm-hmm. that have held organizations back for years, and they never transform in the way that they want to.
Well, as an ENTP, what I can tell you right now, it's funny. You brought up the we're a family, we're a team. And the Netflix culture deck, when that came out, I was like, what a brilliant marketing move. Mm-hmm. Like, and it is amazing content, but I was like, the way they released it, all of that. And it floored me. I mean, it went through the digital services space as fast as it went through the rest of the world, I think. But the thing that got me was so many agencies, digital agencies, traditional advertising agencies, they've got that family feel. And mm-hmm. and when they talk about it, you know, I think you're right. That's why you don't go home and say, where's Dad? Oh, we had to let him go.
That's right. Yeah. Thank God for me, because otherwise I'd have been out of a job years ago. Where's Dad? He's still not back. Let's get rid of him.
He, you know, he always complained about things that he did. He never did the dishes. You know, the yard was getting a little shaggy and he kept eating off other people's plates. It just was not going to happen. We had to let Dad go. So I'm glad to hear you say that. And it's also one of those things that, yeah, it holds you back. A lot of times in my experience, both with large organizations and smaller, they accept the change on a superficial level, knowing that it's probably not going to stick. So do you see that sometimes that they've been through this series of, I'll give you my favorite example. We were working with AT&T, a fairly large division, and the guy was explaining the mission to us, and over his right shoulder, I could see the mission statement. It was completely different than what he was saying. And he saw the look on my face and he was like, what? And this is the head of a pretty big business unit. I mean, I'm sure this guy had multiple cars and all that kind of stuff. Mm. And I was like, what you're saying is not what's on the plaque behind you. And he turned around and he literally ripped it off the wall.
Oh, wow.
And he said, this is old. And he threw it in the garbage. And that, to me, summed up so many quick moves that corporations make that the people just realize, just wait it out. It's not really going to change. How do you get that message across that this is really a real shift this time?
Well, great question. And organizations make mistakes all the time because they bring in consultants to define their culture for them. So immediately you're making it someone else's responsibility, not the staff's. And the inner child in us, Carl, just goes, you know what? That's not mine. I didn't create it. You know, right. I just don't, not me. You know, it's like being told what your values are. Your values are, no. I have my own set of values and they are not those five things that you're telling me that they are. Which is why people have to be involved in the definition of it in order to make it theirs. The vision's right. An interesting one because I always say that a vision is there to be lived, not laminated. So as soon as you put the vision on the wall, you've already failed. It should be short enough to be memorable. And again, the staff are involved in the creation of the vision, so it feels like theirs, even though they might not use any of their words. But it drives every single decision that you make, the vision. Every single decision as an individual doing my job and as an organization in terms of what we're going to take on. And the quick fix solution, so quick fix is bring consultants in to define our culture, go agile, send people on a training course and you expect things to change immediately. Let's call that a digital transformation project. Everything will change. And they're just not proven to work. They're not proven to work. And organizations continue to make those mistakes, Carl.
Vision should be lived, not laminated. Mm. I am going to put that on my wall. I am. And just see if anybody understands the joke. That is right there with the price of admission. To me, it's always one of those things where if a company is constantly changing and the culture is evolving, you know, it's got to be an ongoing process. So this idea, if you put something on the wall, you fixed a moment in time that's not even necessarily going to, you know, last 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, I met with a CEO recently and he said, I've heard you do really good culture change projects. I was like, that's not what I do at all. I was like, I'm in the business of cultural evolution. I give you a start point from which you can build the future that you need in order to deliver whatever it is you do successfully. Because culture never stops evolving. Right. Never stops evolving. You can't click your fingers and change. You can change over 3-6 months, but then you continue to change because of the way that we introduce new technology, new people, new thinking, all of those kinds of things, Carl. So yeah, culture never ever stops evolving. So thinking you can fix it and say, right, that's it, we're done. No, not really. You know, and a culture, from the work that I do, the culture's got an end date of 1 year. Because if you're not then redefining it every year, you've kind of failed because you're saying that these attitudes, beliefs, behaviors, and traditions of last year are still relevant. Well, they shouldn't be.
I knew I was going to really, really like you. I knew that coming into this, just having read so many things. And this just proves it. I'm so excited to say hello in person. The other thing is there's a rumor going around. That you may love karaoke.
It's so not a rumor. I tell everybody. I do love karaoke. Someone said, it's like, oh, did you always want to be a pop star or something? I was like, no, it's just an extreme way for me to get my extroversion out into the public domain. And I do. I like a good sing song. I can't deny it.
All right. Go-to song. What is it?
Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles.
The Buggles?
Yeah. Way back in the 80s.
Goodness. So good. That's awesome. I'm either Pride and Joy Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh, yeah?
Although occasionally I will go with a little You've Lost That Lovin' Feeling.
Oh, yeah. One of the classics.
Gotta do it. Well, it is a Digital PM Summit tradition, sir. And there is a karaoke bar in the guest houses at Graceland. So we will definitely share a stage together. We'll figure out a way to do it.
We should do Islands in the Stream, Carl. You and me.
We could do it.
What a countdown for the other guests who are going to be there. Wow.
You know, at that point, the show's over. And I don't want to say anything, but I really don't care. You know, if they want to leave, they want to leave. Well, I can't wait to meet you. Thank you so much for swinging by today. And it's just over a month away. and we'll be doing islands in the stream there.
Can't wait, Carl. Thanks so much for having me on, mate.
You got it. I appreciate it, Colin. For everybody listening, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week. All the best.